I thought I'd begin my thoughts today with a quote that many of you have heard before. Indeed, the nodding of the server at 8 a.m. means I have said it a number of times before. But I'm probably going to use it again. But I really, really want to think about this and what it means. It's taken from Who is Jesus? Answers to Your Questions About the Historical Jesus. My point, once again, you kind of feel he had to make the point a number of times, is not that those ancient people told literal stories and we are now smart enough to take them symbolically, but that they told them symbolically and we are now dumb enough to take them literally. I have heard and read that quote in many places, many contexts over the years, but if I'm honest, I feel I'm only just starting to get to grips with it. And I'm only just starting to understand how much depth and wisdom that short quote contains. And it certainly seemed pertinent to the reading from our Hebrew scriptures from this book, from the book of Numbers, the book that we call Numbers this morning. We are in the realm of big mythology in our Hebrew scripture, and indeed in our gospel reading for today, which links with it. It could be argued that that's even the case for our reading from the Epistle to the Ephesians, also a kind of creation story for the early Jesus movements as relating to Paul. But I don't want to dig too deeply into that one today. We will begin with part of the identity myth that is the Exodus. And I call it so because so much of Hebrew and Christian identity is tied up in the stories of Exodus, of which today's snaky business is a part. In summary, a number of the Israelites, having escaped from Egypt, are started to consider what they left behind. And compared to a life in the wilderness, even apparently the slavery of Egypt had attractions. Regular meals, clear boundaries, that kind of thing. It strikes me as very similar to those who say, well, say what you like about Mussolini, but at least he made the trains run on time. Anyway, according to our story, God sends serpents to bite these recalcitrant folk in a move that presages the movie Snakes on a Plane by a few thousand years. And serpents are sent among the complainers and in the end cry to God for mercy. Moses fashions a serpent for the people to gaze upon and be healed, though admittedly for someone like me, just the sight of a snake would probably cause my toes to curl up and conk out. And by my deliberately flippant retelling, you get the idea that I can't buy into any literalist form of this story. That's not meant to sound like disrespect. In fact, I take this story very seriously. But for the meaning and the meanings beneath the immediate narrative, more than the narrative itself. In previous years, and it's really interesting to have read back over the last four or five times I've preached this in the last 15 years or so. In previous years, I've tried to draw out the metaphor from the story, but I realize it's a mark of where my own journey is going, that I was still, even 3 years ago when I last preached, beginning from a semi-literal perspective, how this might actually have happened, speculating that perhaps somewhere deep in the social and historical background of the wandering tribe that became Israel, there was a particularly hard time in a serpent-infested region of a desert. Except that the more I read, the more I learn, the more I realize that there may not even have been a wandering tribe or tribes who identified as Israelites or Hebrews at any time. In fact, the evidence of any existence of the Hebrew peoples, any one group who were slaves in Egypt, anything resembling the plagues or any Red Sea crossing or any Exodus account or wandering in the wilderness or takeover of the land of Canaan, any evidence is starkly absent. The identity of those who call themselves the children of Israel or the Hebrew people doesn't seem to emerge until a group already within the land of Canaan start referring to themselves that way. And if that sounds familiar, then you may have listened to my little rant last Sunday when I spoke in what I refer to, thanks to Andrew Gates' wonderful naming as the Sirmuncle at Evensong. But I'm going to quote myself, just briefly. There is little to no archaeological or documentary or any other evidence that the tribes we've come to know as the Hebrews or Israelites have an existence before their emergence in Canaan, Palestine. The stories we have in what we call the Hebrew Bible seem to have common roots in other early Middle Eastern cultures, and some of them are almost word for word from even more ancient sources. End quote. For me, that changes how we view these documents that make up our scriptures. There is, it seems, not even a whiff of historical narrative in these stories. They seem to be completely and entirely metaphorical. Just as Crossan himself is getting at in this quote I began with, our forebears knew what they were doing when they created these stories, these meaning-making myths, and we are just getting to grips with the metaphorical nature of them. These stories are trying to give a sense of belonging, a sense of identity, and they do so by creating myths relating to what it means to be community, particularly what it means to be a community that seeks to live out the values of God, their God, the God they believe is drawing them together into community. Our scriptures are so carefully crafted, the images and the ideas in them often representing much bigger concepts than first seem to appear. And what's changing in my own understanding is that those who wrote these stories really knew what they were doing when they wrote symbolically. They aren't writing any form of history. They are layering story upon story, image upon image, idea upon idea, and all with one end, to explore our relationship with the divine and with one another in community, and to ask, where is God in all of this? When I preached on this a few years back, I speculated that the snakes in the story are perhaps those who are spreading ferment and dissatisfaction, those who are creating a poison that breaks down community. This story then becomes a metaphor and poetry which points us to self-awareness and growing in understanding. And the image of the serpent on a pole, on a post, becomes a symbol of what it means to truly see, to see where the poison is, that which breaks down community, and begin with that knowledge to heal and grow together in community, in the community of faith, in the community of the beloved, the Christ community, and beyond that, into our society and into the world, with love and peace and justice. Such an interpretation, and here I will say it is an interpretation, I am not claiming to have sorted this one out. But within this, it gives us a way of looking at the story that causes us to ask questions not only of the text, but of ourselves. First, the question of where we are looking. Those who hankered after the days of Egypt seem to have developed amnesia about the slavery they were bound in. Their focus was looking back, wishing for what they perceived to be as better days, which perhaps weren't better, but felt more secure. We can be good at that ourselves, locking our doors, living behind fences, because we've been told how dangerous the world is. And that can translate into a fear that prevents our true encounter with the other. It also creates a world where we're afraid of one another, or that people are always looking to take away our stuff or to harm us. A world filled with literal and metaphorical barriers between us. And I don't have answers as to how we work with that, but we are called, I believe, to strike a compassionate balance between safety and openness. It's something we must pay attention to constantly. And we're also guilty, I know, of living in the past. And I believe the story challenges us to ask again, to what are we looking? Is it to a golden age of St. John's common life? Or to a time of security, or to the hope of peace and quiet? Or are we looking first to the spiritual heart of our community, the Christ held up like the serpent in the wilderness, that we might be inspired by the Christ life within us to seek the Christ life in others and encounter that with grace and openness. Then, do we look around and consider the wonder and value of each member of this community and seek to carefully and compassionately engage with one another? Building up our community and caring for one another has certainly been crucial through this time of pandemic that we have experienced and are experiencing. It is always where the heart of Christ's community should be, that we might be built up in love. And then the focus of our hearts and our minds and our attention should always move outwards. For all of our gatherings, our shared learnings, our pastoral care, our growth of community, and I have seen plenty of growth over the past 11 years, all of this is not an end in itself to sustain this place called St. John the Divine. It's all so that we might proclaim in word and action that God so loved and loves the world. People are looking for genuine spiritual communities, places of welcome where they can honestly grapple with meaning. Places of welcome and honesty, trust and inclusion, affirmation and grace. Not the latest fad or groovy multimedia funky music, although that can be fun. I've done that too. But people are looking for a place of connection with the divine, with fellow pilgrims, with one another. There are snakes to be aware of. Perhaps not people, that's not the purpose of the story. But situations, attitudes, and above all, the fears which can threaten our mission and ministry here and now. Snakes create in many of us a visceral fearfulness, not a reasoned response, a gut reaction. I think that sense of fear of who we are and are not, of who we might be or what might go wrong, is what threatens the health and growth of any Christian community. And it's not just the things themselves that are a threat, but our fearfulness about them, which threatens to paralyze us into inaction. Our calling, though, is to hold up a greater standard, to use the image from today's reading, to hold up Christ, to lift up the life and the love of God, and together share a life-giving, joy-giving, love-filled gospel. In order to do this, I believe we need to combat fear with generosity, with love, with service, with openness, with a commitment to justice and equity, with a willingness to explore and engage with our spiritual living, with a willingness to address change and move forward. May God give us courage that we may hold up Christ in our community and in the world to which we have been called. Thanks be to God.